welcome to Cloud Cover. I'm Nick Harris, and today I'm joined by...
Drew McDaniel from the Windows Azure group in Microsoft.
Michael Washam, Senior Program Manager in the same Windows Azure group as Drew is in.
And today we've got some really big announcements to discuss. I guess most importantly, IaaS GA. But prior to that, let's go through a few quick news items, and then we'll cut across to some discussion and demo about what this means to you as developers. So, the first item in the news here is that Windows Azure AD is now GA'd, so it's ready for your production applications. If you come down and read through this article on the Windows Azure blog, you'll see that today already over 2.9 million businesses are using Windows Azure AD via Office 365. With the GA of Windows Azure AD, there's also a number of other enhancements available to it. One of them is the ability to add Windows Azure AD to your Windows Azure subscription for customers who use Microsoft accounts for logging into Windows Azure. Another item there that's now available is granting and revoking AD permissions has been greatly simplified. So there are two things that have come along with the Windows Azure AD GA, and it's worthwhile logging into the portal and checking it out. The next thing here is a small but useful enhancement to the Service Bus APIs. Now, these are beta or pre-release software. They've gone off and released this update to the SDK on NuGet. And essentially what they've done is they've provided a task-based API so you can use awaiten async methods to interact with Service Bus. So if we walk down through here, you'll see that there's some details about how you can go off and consume this. It's only distributed today via NuGet, so you can use the NuGet Package Manager, or you can use the NuGet Package Manager console. You'll see importantly here that they're using the include pre-release switch to pull down the latest bits, or this pre-release bits. And if we go down a bit further, you'll see, and I'm going to look at this post in reverse order, so this first block of code here essentially allows you to go off and what is it doing here? Checking if a queue exists. Now this is using the existing API, so you've got a begin and end method, and you can see that it's, you know, a little bit convoluted to go off and sort of read, but for most people that's okay. But as developers, hey, I'm lazy, I presume you're probably lazy. It'd be nicer if we had a much easier way of consuming this. So you can see now that what we've got here is begin queue exists. Instead, you can just go and use await to see if a queue exists like that. So it basically turns it into to one line of code. So moving along, they've also got some information around how you can go and handle exceptions in this new way of consuming the API. So definitely worth pulling down and having a play with. I'm sure it'll make your code a lot simpler to read. So the next thing that we've got here is Windows Azure Conf. So on April 23rd, so this is actually not too far away, we're going to have a keynote presentation from Scott Guthrie and a number of community speakers coming to speak about Windows Azure services, like mobile services, like virtual machines, virtual networks, cloud services, all these types of things. They're coming in to talk about their experiences building with Windows Azure, so you can really get some great insights into how other people out there in the developer community are utilizing Windows Azure. So it's definitely worth watching. It's all live streamed and free. So check that out on windowsazureconf.net. And next, I'll hand over to Drew to talk through the Windows Azure GA announcement.
Excellent. Thank you so much. So our recent announcement for bringing infrastructure as a service out of the preview mode into full availability in GA, this is for both the Windows Azure virtual machines and the Windows Azure virtual networks. So with this, we've brought, first off, the full support of Windows Azure, the SLAs that go along with Windows Azure, so you can run your production workloads inside Windows Azure on the virtual machines or virtual networks. The other major item that we have introduced in this release with this GA is a set of images that are available within Windows Azure. During the preview timeframe, you saw SQL Server and evaluation and a beta of BizTalk. When you notice in the new version, the GA release, we actually have multiple images of SQL Server that you can purchase on a per hour basis, and as well the BizTalk server that you can also purchase on a per hour basis. We have also added an evaluation version of BizTalk Server 2013, and an evaluation version of SharePoint Server 2013 that you can use to trial that out within Windows Azure. Additionally, we have added additional sizes, larger VMs with more memory that you can use.
That's a big one.
Bit of a cheer there.
Exactly. For those of you running SharePoint or SQL Server workloads, these new VMs, you'll see them cleverly named as A4, A6, and A7. They allow 4 gigs of RAM and 28 gigs of RAM, or 8 cores and 56 gigs of RAM. So you can actually bring your real production workloads, your larger workloads, to Windows Azure, run them on these new virtual machines.
Are the previous images also like aliased as A4, 5, and such, or what's the story there?
You would think.
So to keep it simple and confusing at the same time, we've left the existing existing sizes as they were. So you have your extra small through extra large.
Right.
Over time, we are looking to bring that the A numeric numbering to the rest of them.
Okay.
In addition, it's important to note that anything that you are running in the preview version of Windows Azure transparently moves over to the GA. Yep. So you now have full support on anything that you were running previously under the preview flag of infrastructure services, the virtual machines and virtual networks.
Excellent.
So let's go ahead and flip over to...
What's that last item there in bold? Price reduction.
Price reduction. Excellent. That's a great point. So the other thing we've announced is that we will we'll be price competitive and have the same prices as other cloud providers for the commodity workloads of compute, storage, and networking. And so for customers, when they want to bet on Windows Azure, pricing is not a worry. You can guarantee that Windows Azure will stay competitive with the other public cloud providers.
Okay. So that says, you know, roughly there's 21 to 33% price reduction on GA pricing starting at some point in time, I assume.
Correct. The prices we stay with our preview prices until June 1st. And then as of June 1st, we'll see the price reduction from the original announced price of 12 cents down to 8 cents.
Yep.
In addition, with the GA, the price for Linux virtual machines goes from 8 cents down to 6 cents a core hour for Linux.
Right.
So an immediate price reduction on Linux and a price reduction as well after the promotional period. Yep.
I read that it was for VMs, and there's also some price reduction on PaaS. So if you're running cloud service, web role, worker role, those stuff, I think.
Yeah, so and PaaS has dropped, has a price reduction immediately announced with GA of IaaS.
Very cool. There'll be some happy people with that.
Absolutely.
Excellent. So we'll do a quick flip over. Okay, so
it's a bit more natural, I guess.
Here we are in the portal, and let's just actually look at this. First thing you'll notice is the virtual machine is no longer in preview. It is the tag has been removed, and it is full production availability. You have the quick create as we've had before, and the gallery. We click into the gallery. Here we see the different images. We have kept the Linux images as well as Windows. You have Windows 2012 and 2008 R2, as well as the SQL Server. Now, SQL Server, BizTalk Server, you have the option if you are a customer that's already purchased that on-premise, you can bring your own license and run that in a virtual machine that you deploy, or you can use one of these options and pay for the license on a per-hour basis. As well, SharePoint, you can spin things up, and Michael will talk a little bit more about how we actually make SharePoint even easier to use.
So I think the pricing, if you're running one of those specific workloads, being BizTalk Server, SQL Server, there was a link on Scott's blog if you're looking for it and you're interested in what that pricing is. There's a link out to a page that details the pricing. So essentially, you pay a little bit on top of the standard compute cost, such that you don't have to buy the license for that particular product.
Exactly. You just pay a little bit more on the standard compute price, and then you just pay for what you use. When you're done with it, you can spin it down, and you stop paying for it.
Cool.
So we can look at one. Let's say you're running an enterprise SQL Server. And we'll take a quick look. You can now select the larger sizes. Another thing that we've done here, based on feedback, is enhancing the security. So when you set up your virtual machine, we give it a host name. But the other thing we want to do now is allow you to select the administrator name. So here, we used to be defaulted to administrator. Now you can set up a different admin. And by doing this, because this machine is accessible on the internet, it makes it more secure. So not only do you have your strong password that you'd be setting down here, but you also have the ability for setting the administrator name. And so again, it makes it more difficult for anybody to get into your machine.
Yeah.
What we've done here is your default administrator name is just renamed, and so that default administrator name is no longer there, makes it harder to get into the machine.
So it's a non-standard name for admin, basically.
Exactly, exactly. This will allow us. The other thing is, we did note the premium sizes do incur an additional charges, so you get a little notification that the premium size will have the higher cost, and that's available in Scott's blog, the details of the pricing.
Good thing you're using Michael's account, I guess.
That's right. Exactly.
Thanks, Troy.
Let's spin this up and we'll run it on Michael's thing.
So DNS name, that's our public-facing name for this.
Exactly. This would be the public-facing name. You could still use your virtual networks, or you can use just a straight location. Spin things up. We'll spin it up into Michael's account so that...
Just for those people, all this provisions that are new to this, what's the difference for them provisioning directly into, say, a data center versus into a virtual network?
So the difference between just picking a data center versus a virtual network, the virtual network, you have a consistent IP address on the machine. It also allows you to connect cloud services. So you can deploy cloud service one with a set of VMs. Let's say that's your web front end. Then you can deploy another cloud service, which is your database tier, connect them through that virtual network.
Right.
In addition, that brings you the power to connect to on-premise. So if you have a hybrid application, or you're doing authentication in your on-premise, you want to keep local to your network, or local to your on-premise, you can then use connectivity up to your virtual network to have that hybrid application.
Right.
It's all over a secure VPN tunnel, mm-hmm. so you're not going over the public internet unencrypted.
Okay, cool.
All right, so while this is deploying, I'd like to hand over to Michael and walk through some of the automation, some of the stuff that we've done in PowerShell to really take the existing virtual machines and the infrastructure as a service and take it to the next level.
Cool. Thanks, Drew. All right, let's swap here. Okay, so while this machine is booting up, let's go off and talk about some of the new functionality that Drew and I's team has put together with Remote PowerShell. So one of the big things that we've heard from before is, you know, the PowerShell command lets give you the ability to just spin up as much infrastructure as you want, but they did not give you the ability to actually configure the virtual machines once they're booted. You had to go off and, you know, create custom images or use additional software, whatever needed to make that extra step happen. So with the GA release, we've added new functionality to enable Remote PowerShell by default on virtual machines when you're creating them directly from PowerShell. So just to kind of walk you through a couple of examples of what that can do for you. So the first thing I've done is I have a new PowerShell commandlet here called get Azure Win RM URI. It's kind of complicated, but the official service underneath Remote PowerShell is called Windows Remote Management.
Yep.
So we wanted to stick true to the protocol, and you know, if you're a hardcore WinRM expert out there, then this will recognize it. If you're not new to, or if you are new to Remote PowerShell, just think WinRM, Remote PowerShell. What get WinRM URI does is whenever you boot up a virtual machine that has Remote PowerShell enabled, this commandlet will actually go off and get your virtual machine configuration value, and it'll dump out, it'll tell you how to connect to it.
So you said when you provision a VM using PowerShell, remote management, PowerShell remote management is on by default.
It's on by default.
If we did it through the portal like Drew just did, it's not?
It's not yet.
Okay.
We're still under consideration whether we should do
that. We're working through that to enable that through the portal. But if you're using in PowerShell, we know that you want to do some remote management with PowerShell.
So the one you just logged into there, you've already pre-deployed that using PowerShell.
I haven't logged in yet, but there is a VM booted up that I'm going to log into.
All right.
So what I'm going to show you is that whenever I run get Azure WinRM URI, what it returns back is basically a URI object that tells me the connection string that I can connect to from PowerShell. If you notice, it is going over HTTPS, so this is a pure connection, and transport is 100% secure, so whenever we pass credentials across, there's no chance of them being intercepted.
Can we see that port mapping in the portal? Is it there, just out of interest?
So if I go over here, and this one is, what is the name of this one? Demo Web 1.
Sorry to diverge from your demo flow.
Oh, you're great at that.
I was just trying to wonder what the PowerShell scripts were doing.
So this is exactly. Yeah. So the PowerShell script, we don't know one of these endpoints is from a PowerShell.
Yeah.
So unless we want you, or unless we wanted the end user to have to log into the portal and figure out that they need to be connecting on 5287.9, the PowerShell commandlet enumerates all the endpoints, figures out the one that's private port is 5986, which is a remote PowerShell port, and then returns that information back to the user.
Cool.
Which is here. So I'm going to take this URI, and I'm going to go ahead and pass that to the interps session commandlet. So that's going to be basically the connection string and the credentials. Now, the credentials I got from the prompt a while ago, but you can actually configure that where it doesn't prompt, and it's fully automated as well. So we'll go ahead and hit F5, and it sometimes takes a few seconds to actually negotiate the connection, but actually that was really quick. So I literally am logged into the remote machine. So you can tell where you're at by the prompt. It's demo web1service.cloudup.net. Yeah. So you can see that I'm actually executing commands on the remote machine. I can create directories. All the fancy stuff you can do. So if you wanted to do some basic monitoring to watch your machines, you can actually do performance counters directly from PowerShell.
Yep.
So there's all kinds of interesting things you can do here. Now, this is connecting to a machine that's actually already booted up. So, this is a scenario where I'd want to log in, check the disk space, run a script, make sure all my machines are all happy, whatever I wanted to do.
Talking about disk space, anything new in the size of the standard disk?
Let's talk about that. So what I want to show you now is the same PowerShell idea, except I'm going to do it at boot. Say you wanted to provision a virtual machine, that whenever it boots up, it installs IIS, it does other things. This could be downloading source from Git, deploying an application, whatever. So let's talk about that image size, or the disk size that you were just hinting at here. So the first thing I want to do is actually exit from a remote session, because it won't work. Is I'm going to call get Azure VM image, and I'm going to select the image name. And we'll figure out the image name that we're going to use for creation. So you can see we have a lot of these. And the one thing that we want to point out here is that is some of these images now support 127 gig OS disk sizes.
That's great. Yep.
That is a huge improvement for customers that are installing a lot of software on C drive and were kind of running low on disk space before. So now you can actually boot your disk up and actually have enough space.
Of course, though, for data intensive applications, you can just attach, a 1 terabyte data disk if you want.
You can attach as much data disk all the way up to 16 terabytes.
Yep.
So let's go ahead and boot this one off of a 127 gig disk. And the other thing I want to show you here is a new parameter that we've added to the new Azure VM commandlet. So this parameter here is called wait for boot. And what this does is it takes the work away from you where you don't have to basically write some code to detect the virtual machine status and make sure it's already booted up before you log in and execute some code against it. So this will basically put a big sleep or a polling sleep to make sure that everything's good. From there, I'm actually have a little helper function that we wrote that allows you to download the certificate that's generated for remote PowerShell, put it on your local machine to protect you against man-in-the-middle attacks. And from there, we're calling the same function, get Azure WinRM URI. And instead of calling interps session, I'm actually just calling the invoke command commandlet. This is a native PowerShell commandlet. It's not anything to do with Windows Azure.
Right.
Passing that connection string and the credentials that I'm going to get prompted for. And basically, this block of code, which is real simple, it's just going to install IIS on the server. Mm-hmm. This block of code will execute on the remote server at boot time, and IIS will automatically be provisioned. You can imagine that you could put some lines in here, download your application, configure, install MSIs, whatever you need to do to actually fully deploy your virtual machines.
So, Michael, does it mean that you could use any tool that uses PowerShell today, System Center Orchestrator, to now control your virtual machines in a much more robust manner?
WinRM is an open standard. I mean, there's tons of applications out there that use it today for managing virtual machines on-prem, and you could use them in conjunction with Windows Azure Virtual Machines today.
That's very nice.
So basically, although you still can, you may never need to actually log into that VM. You could have this scripted.
I mean, the way of infrastructure and service is headless. You should not ever have to RDP into them and actually manually do something. DevOps is kind of the way that people in the cloud are steering, and automation is going to be central to that. So I'm going to go ahead and hit F5. I don't know if we'll ever actually see the end result of this because it takes a little while to provision. But you can see that this is just a general idea of what we would have to do to deploy a fully configured virtual web server. Mm-hmm. Now, one more demo I want to show, and we certainly won't be able to finish this one because it takes a long time, but just to kind of give me a better idea of the capabilities you can do is, we just before installed IIS and mm-hmm. turned on port 80. This one, this script is a little bit more robust. What it does is it actually creates a virtual machine, it adds a data disk to it, and if you're unfamiliar with virtual machines today in Windows Azure, those disks come up unformatted. Yep. So you have to RDP into them, mm-hmm. format the disk, and configure them. So we have a PowerShell script here that automatically formats all the disks for you, so it's completely ready to go. And this executes on demand. And then the second thing it does is actually configures a domain controller. So it installs a domain controller role and provisions out of full AD force for you.
Okay. Can you specify what format you want the disk? Is there a flag?
If you open up the PowerShell script, it's just using the Windows disk part. So anything you can do with disk part today, you can do with PowerShell. So this one we could literally run and spin up a complete AD forest. Mm-hmm. And the beauty of this is we're actually in the process of writing some scripts that will not only spin up AD, but we'll also spin up some SQL servers in an always-on cluster. And we're also going to give you the ability to deploy a SharePoint farm, all from remote PowerShell. So the intent is we're going to have a set of sample PowerShell scripts that will be up on CodePlex, and where people can download all their scripts, configure them, do whatever they want, and literally with a push of F5 on PowerShell ISE, spin up an entire SharePoint farm.
And you'll be finished building them by the time we release this on Friday, right?
No. So they'll have to watch this and say, man, I really wish it was done on Friday. But they hopefully will be done sometime early next week.
Okay.
So
look for
an announcement on the Windows Azure blog or somewhere in that area, and you should be able to download these.
And they'll be going on CodePlex, you said.
They're going to be on CodePlex.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Microsoft IT guys don't know what GitHub is now. That's just a joke. CodePlex is where these guys go.
Okay, very cool. Just keep your eye out for it.
Exactly. The last thing I want to show is we've added, this was a huge feature request. People have asked for it. We've asked for it when I was in DPE. We've wanted this functionality forever. This is implemented by the Windows Azure Storage team, specifically for ISGA. And what this code does, it allows you to copy blobs from storage account to storage account.
Yep.
It may not sound like a big deal, but whenever you start thinking about, hey, I have this virtual machine on the West Coast, I'd like to move it to the East Coast or copy it, whatever. And there's not a simple way of doing that other than downloading everything to your local machine and then uploading it.
It's quite slow.
Right. And what this code does is it basically asynchronously tells Windows Azure Storage Service, here's a blob out here on some data source. It doesn't even have to be in Windows Azure Storage as long as it's reachable by the storage service. Tell it to copy from source A to a Windows Azure Storage service. And this could be cross-region, cross-subscription, cross-cloud provider, even. And being asynchronous, I could literally copy and paste this little snippet of code right here and have it execute, copy multiple VHDs at a time.
So when you do this, Michael, is it actually downloading to your machine and then pushing it back up?
No.
Or how is it actually being copied?
The beauty of this is it actually is going to, the storage service in the cloud is going to initiate the copy, so it never ever touched your machine.
Very nice.
One less hop.
Right, one less hop. So I'm going to, since this is actually executing another session, I'm going to create a new PowerShell tab, copy and paste this over, and I'm going to kick off this copy. And this is pretty straightforward code. Basically, what it's looking for is it wants your source URL. So this is my test copy. This is a 32 GBHD I have on a storage account on the West Coast. It wants your storage keys on the East Coast.
So anyone who's looking for free storage, there's a name and key.
So feel free to use this until I forget to delete it. So you basically create this this account, this context, and pass it to the start Azure copy Azure storage blob, and note that will be renamed in the next release of PowerShell. It was kind of named during the initial release. Anyways, so we've already kicked off the copy, and it's running asynchronously here, so now all I have to do is run this get Azure blob copy state to actually get the status of the blob copy. You can see right now we're in pending, but here in the next few minutes you can see the storage service will start copying the bytes over.
Okay. So let's talk about the pending status. So what's that mean if we've, you're trying to copy stuff, I'm trying to copy stuff, 1,000 other people are trying to copy stuff. Is a storage service just dealing with this as a global queue?
You should have the storage guys on here and ask me the details. I'm just a PowerShell guy that says, "Hey, look, it's copying." But no, this is a single service, but the storage service has a big pipe.
Yeah,
it's the same pipe we use to transfer data between Windows Azure data centers.
Yeah.
And this is actually the same pipe, the same system. It's very robust. It's what we use for replicating the images as part of the platform itself.
Right.
So we're exposing those platform services to the end customers.
Okay. Right. Oh, and you can see we actually have initiated a copy. Yeah. So we actually have bytes copying from the East Coast to the West Coast.
Okay. So can we see that in your storage account now? Will it have shown up like that something?
I believe
there,
it does. Or? So if I go here to the East storage one, hit F5. Here's a container we just created, and here is the blob. So with page blobs, we basically write the entire bytes out, and then we create the blob as a whole, and then we add the bytes to it as we read them in. So it's not officially there just yet. And
you can see it's in total bytes.
Yep, it's in total bytes. Yeah. And the beauty is you can kick off using the start commandlet multiple copies, and then just use this one to actually check the status of them so you know when they're done.
Very cool.
It's a very nice asynchronous pattern that you can use to copy large amounts of data back and forth.
Yep.
And can you use it also within the same data, Azure location if you wanted?
Yeah, exactly. This can be copied from storage count, since same data center or across data centers or even across subscriptions.
Very useful.
Yep.
This was a huge ask to all the people out there doing IS today, especially when you get your trial account, you get your virtual machine, and you're like, oh, this is really nice. I want to move it to my real account. It's kind of hard.
It's very nice.
Yeah, this makes that scenario much simpler.
Cool. And is that anything else special to show us? Or?
I think, let me see. Let me flip over to my blog post. There's a bunch of other stuff. I don't have demos for all of them, but I can give you the crash course on which ones are which. So if you want to know the details, see more examples, or download the code that I just showed you, go to michaelwashington.com, and the very first blog post is here. It has all the details to it. This is the example that I just showed about installing IS and the WinRAR cert. And so I do want to talk a little bit about disk mobility. Disk mobility is a really key feature for customers that run, especially whenever they're running data servers on-prem too. We have two commandlets, add Azure VHD and save Azure VHD, that allow you to upload a virtual hard disk to the cloud or vice versa, download it. And the beauty of this is it is optimized. So if you know, the 127 gig VHD we just saw, whenever it boots up, it's obviously not going to be filled with 127 gigs. It'll only have 10 to 12 or whatever Windows takes. So whenever we save Azure VHD, we're only going to download the bytes that are actually written to the disk. So you're not downloading the full 127 gigs. And same thing with the upload. We have some really good optimizations in there.
Question on format of your VHDs, what's supported?
So the format of VHDs is really important. The only format we currently support is just VHD. So we don't support VHDX just yet. And we also don't support dynamic VHDs. So the disks have to be fixed. But using these PowerShell commandlets, it actually does make it nice because you can hand it a dynamic VHD and we convert it on the fly for you to fixed.
Okay.
So not so much on the way down. Whenever you download a VHD and save Azure VHD, it will be fixed. Right. So however big that disk is, you need that space on the download stream.
Okay.
Some of the other things we want to talk about is on the blog here is the same code I just showed you about copying across regions, except you get to type in your own storage key.
Yep.
Mention the admin username that Drew showed in the portal. This is a breaking change today, so beware. Before you download a new PowerShell commandlet, say you will have to go add this parameter to your scripts today or they will break whenever you create new virtual machines.
Okay.
And of course we support the new high memory sizes, A6 and A7. And there's one more
I am a little bit disappointed on the naming convention here because that's A6, right? So you've done what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, then 6. You didn't use zero based indexing.
Right.
It should have been A0.
Yeah. True.
Extra small should have started at A0 rather than A1.
Or maybe there's more to come.
Maybe.
Is that a feature announcement? And the final commandlet we did add, this was just a needed commandlet since to support SLAs and virtual machines today, if you want an SLA, you need at least two virtual machines grouped into an availability set.
Right.
And how to do that is whenever you go through the portal, you can create a virtual machine and specify the availability set. When you create the second virtual machine, you can have it join that availability set.
Yep.
If you're doing this through PowerShell or the portal, sometimes you don't realize you need to do that to hit the SLA. Mm. And so we've added the set Azure availability set commandlet so you can change that after your virtual machines are deployed. So if you have two web servers and you forgot to put in an availability set, three lines of code and bam, you have an SLA and you have a very highly available set of virtual machines.
Yep. Very cool. Very easy by the looks of things as well. A couple lines of PowerShell.
Right. And that, I mean, we put out a lot of functionality to hit this release, and I think the remote PowerShell one is really going to be a winner for people out there trying to automate VMs.
It's been a very heavily asked thing.
Yeah, huge.
Before, you would need to build up your own image. You take the base image, configure it only for remote PowerShell, and then use that image. You'd have to patch your own image. Now it's just simple. Use the platform image, enable remote PowerShell, and off away you are.
We actually have a hands-on lab to enable remote PowerShell in an image. We can delete that one now, by the way. So need a new one, so.
Yep. Okay, awesome.
Gotcha.
Let's have a quick check on Drew's VM just to see that it has spun up.
There we go. And which one was yours, Drew?
It was called Demo.
Demo-12, I believe.
I have demo 1, demo 2, there we go, yeah, there service.
Host name, there we go.
Name the host name. That is so crazy. You should name it local host.
So let's look at this one, look at the endpoints. And so this one we see being created directly through the portal, wasn't created with PowerShell, now you can RDP into this one and use that as a standard virtual machine.
So, and that is a good thing to be warned of, is if you do want PowerShell, remote PowerShell enabled, you have to create it from PowerShell, because there's no flag to go into this virtual machine and turn it on after the fact.
Right, but you could, of course, RDP into it.
And manually enable it.
Manually do it, then add the port endpoint mapping here.
And correct.
Endpoints. Okay, very cool. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nick. It's been a blast.
All right, is there anything else you want to add before we go? Any announcements?
Not so much. I think we're good.
You like your job?
It's awesome.
Well, thanks for watching, and I hope this gives you a great overview of the GA announcement for IaaS. Look forward to seeing you or hearing what you're doing with it. If you'd like to reach us, you can get us at Cloud Cover Show. Or, Michael, what's your Twitter alias?
MWashamMS. MWashamMS.
And Drew?
Drew M at Microsoft.
You have to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, Bob will edit it in for you.
Oh, sorry. Drew McDaniel at Microsoft.com.
Obviously not a follower or watcher of the show, so we'll have to out him publicly. But thanks again for coming.